from ABC News, World News This Week. I'm Chuck Sievertson in New York. Coming up,
a speaker has not been elected.
Holdout Republicans stopping Kevin McCarthy's bid to be speaker in Monday Night Football.
Just seeing the agony on their faces, the concern on their faces.
After a player's heart stopped and he collapsed. After an arrest in the Idaho student killings, the father of one victim.
I want him to feel and see what he's done.
Saying goodbye to Barbara Walters.
She was a pioneer broadcaster.
And Prince Harry on what Diana might think of all the royal strife.
I think she'd be sad.
The people and events that made headlines when World News This Week continues.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
Around and around in the congressional carousel.
No member-elect having received a majority of the votes cast, a speaker has not been elected.
Cheryl Johnson, clerk of the House of Representatives, repeating that over and over again this week.
No nominee having received the majority of the votes cast, a speaker has not been elected.
The new Congress starting with its crucial first vote, picking a speaker. Democrats united.
The Honorable Hakeem Jeffries of the state of New York has received 212.
Though short of the 218 needed, but Republicans with the majority failing to wrangle enough votes to give House GOP leader Kevin McCarthy the gavel. Through much of the week, about 20 Republicans, all staunch conservatives, saying no to McCarthy and giving their votes to someone else. In some rounds, to Florida's Byron Donalds. In others,
the Honorable Jim Jordan of the state of Ohio has received 20.
But by Friday afternoon, progress for McCarthy. The number of votes against him among Republicans down to 6. But as we hear from ABC News congressional correspondent Rachel Scott, still enough to deny him the Speaker's office.
The battle for Speaker of the House now breaking a 100-year record with no definite end in sight.
The House stands adjourned.
The House hasn't been this divided for this long over choosing a Speaker since before the Civil War in 1859.
How long do you think this is going to drag out for at this point?
I'd love to know, but we're working through it.
It's not how you start, it's how you finish. And if we finish well, we'll be very successful.
A small group of conservatives making it clear they won't cave. But those backing McCarthy growing frustrated. Without a speaker, the House can't function. No members can be sworn in. No bills can be passed. Congressman Don Bacon telling me,
our constituents call me. They want help with passports, visas, disability claims, say with the VA, and all that's on hold.
A bitter standoff that McCarthy says will go on for however long it takes.
I'm not putting any timeline on. I just think we've got some progress going on. We've got members talking.
Kevin McCarthy is making progress with some Republican holdouts, but the opposition from that small group of conservatives is strong, and it's enough to block his path.
ABC's Rachel Scott on Capitol Hill. While the House tries to seat a speaker, the Capitol on Friday marking 2 years since the riot of January 6th.
Brian David Sicknick.
With bells and the reading of names of the officers who died during and after the attack. Then President Biden honoring officers who defended the Capitol with a Presidential Civilian Award.
History will remember your names. They'll remember your courage. They'll remember your bravery. Remember your extraordinary commitments to your fellow Americans.
Among them, Capitol Hill Police Officer Harry Dunn. A couple of months ago, he posted about still struggling with PTSD after the riot and spoke about it with ABC News.
I made such good progress to heal and be able to deal with these emotions and these feelings in a healthy manner. And, you know, I could walk in and not be fazed by seeing somebody in a MAGA hat. Or a Confederate flag, it wouldn't. I made such good progress, but it was all just like out of nowhere, just ripped away from me. And it wasn't a specific incident that caused it. I was just like, man, I thought I had this under control. I beat this. But nah, it literally just came out of nowhere, and it broke me. You know, it broke me.
Monday night's football game in Cincinnati between the Bengals and Buffalo Bills coming to a sudden and scary stop in the first quarter when Bills safety DeMar Hamlin made what looked like a routine tackle and then collapsed. The team saying he suffered a cardiac arrest on the field. ESPN's Lisa Salters in the stadium.
That's all we were all hoping for was that DeMar Hamlin was going to get up and that he was going to get on in that ambulance. He was going to give us a thumbs up and we were all going to know that he was okay. And when that didn't happen, I think this entire stadium was just devastated. I mean, right now, all I can really think about is that player, his teammates, just seeing the agony on their faces, the concern on their faces. They're scared for him.
Hamlin taken to a hospital and sedated so a breathing tube could be inserted. And by the end of the week, what so many are calling a miracle. Here's ABC's Dave Packer.
The Bills tweeting that DeMar Hamlin FaceTimed into the team meeting Friday, talking to players and coaches. This after Hamlin had his breathing tube removed overnight. He's now breathing on his own, and on that FaceTime, Hamlin telling his teammates, "Love you, boys."
More from ABC's Alex Perez.
We're going to need everybody. I'll call.
Now, for the first time, we're hearing the dramatic moments as first responders scramble to help in this audio posted by the New York Times.
Call, bring everybody. We need airway doctor, everybody.
The Buffalo Bills safety suffering that horrifying collapse on the field after this tackle during Monday Night Football.
Not what any of us want to see, and everybody's around him.
Hamlin's doctors crediting the swift actions of first responders. Medics began resuscitation less than 1 minute after his heart stopped. Word of his recovery, a relief for T. Higgins, the Bengals wide receiver Hamlin tackled.
Feels good, you know, just knowing that he's okay, he's doing better, and, you know, it makes me feel better inside. So
Hamlin's emotional teammates back at practice, preparing to take the field again Sunday.
One of those teammates, Bills quarterback Josh Allen, saying the team got a message from Hamlin's father, go out and play.
He kind of told us, and really didn't tell us, he demanded us, you know, and you can't not honor his request to go out there and charge forward.
Now back in Idaho and being held without bail, the man suspected of killing 4 University of Idaho students. And ABC's Kena Whitworth says we're learning more about what investigators think happened that night in mid-November.
As Brian Koberger is held without bail in Idaho, charged with the murder of 4 college students.
A newly released affidavit revealing chilling new details from one of the surviving roommates
says she was woken up around 4 a.m. that night by what she thought was Kaylee playing with her dog upstairs. Shortly after, she thought she heard Kaylee say, "There's someone here." The roommate looked out of her bedroom but didn't see anything, then looked out again when she thought she heard crying from Zanna Carnado's room. It was followed by a male voice saying, "It's okay, I'm going to help you." The roommate opening her door a third time, standing frozen as she saw a man clad in black clothing and a mask that covered the person's mouth and nose, noting he was athletically built as he walked toward her, getting so close she could make out his bushy eyebrows. He then walked right out the sliding glass door. The roommate then locking her door, and police not contacted for another 8 hours.
The affidavit also stating police used surveillance footage and cell phone data to place Koberger near the victim's home before, during, and after the crime. Based on cell phone data, police suspect he was in the area at least a dozen times in the months before the murders and returned the morning after.
But the night of, police believe Koberger turned his phone signal off at 2:47 a.m. until 4:48 a.m. It was just about 4:04 in the morning when video captured his white Elantra passing the victim's home. The car not seen again until about 16 minutes later, 4:20. Speeding off. Then at 5:30 a.m., after his cell phone signal was back on,
data shows Koberger traveling back to his home in Pullman from Moscow. The family of one of the victims, Kaylee Gonzalez, now speaking out
after coming face to face with the suspect in court for the first time.
His demeanor was disheveled, beaten, surprised, overwhelmed. He didn't have the swagger that I think he thought he was going to have. Being put in that type of situation, I think you see somebody who feels overwhelmed and defeated.
Kaylee's father, Steve, who's been relentless in his pursuit of answers, telling ABC News he wants to make this as uncomfortable as possible for the defendant.
I want him to feel and see what he's done. And if that means we have to be uncomfortable and we have to go through some things, then we will.
We're also learning new details about the evidence law enforcement used to track down Koberger. Police stating they discovered DNA on the button snap of a tan leather knife sheath that was on the bed next to the body of victim Madison Mogan. Police say they later linked that DNA to Koberger by collecting his father's DNA from trash outside the family's home and matching it to their sample from the crime scene.
That's ABC's Kana Whitworth in Moscow, Idaho. Further west, some serious storms absolutely swamping California. At least two deaths blamed on what is being called a bomb cyclone, riding an atmospheric river straight into the California coast. The system's bringing days of torrential flooding rains. ABC's Mola Lenghi on Friday, surveying the damage just outside San Francisco.
In the Bay Area here, businesses damaged this week, trees toppled, power knocked out across Northern California. In Southern California, sinkholes and flooded streets in Hollywood. In Santa Barbara, this dog being rescued after getting swept away in floodwaters, and an entire family had to be rescued and pulled out of floodwaters in Contra Costa County. According to the National Weather Service, the last 10 days have been the wettest such period in San Francisco since 1871.
The last month of 2022 turning into a strong jobs report to start 2023.
223,000 jobs added in the month of December. The unemployment rate ticking lower to 3.5%. That is near historic lows. Meantime, when you look at wages, they are rising, but they're rising more slowly than they were earlier this year, up about 4.6% over the last 12 months. Now, overall, this is a strong report on the health of the U.S. economy.
But ABC News Chief Business Correspondent Rebecca Jarvis says when it comes to what we're all making and spending, things are still tough for a lot of Americans.
When you look at wages, they are rising, but they're rising more slowly than they were earlier this year, up about 4.6% over the last 12 months. That means that you don't have as much money to cover inflation. Prices are causing American families to spend about $400 more a month. At the same time, they're spending about 11% more on groceries. Rent is up almost 8%. Those are both hard to miss.
This week, we have been remembering a giant of journalism, Barbara Walters, passing away at the age of 93. Here's ABC's Andy Field.
She was a pioneer broadcaster, the first female morning show co-host of the Today Show, first woman to co-host a network evening news program here at ABC News. But she was best known for her interviews. One of her favorites, actor Christopher Reeve, after a horse accident paralyzed him.
You think you will walk again?
I think it's very possible I'll walk again.
And if you don't?
Then I won't walk again.
As simple as that.
Either you do or you don't. See, it's like a game of cards.
In later years, Barbara Walters helped create the popular ABC daytime program, The View. As for her legacy?
I want to be remembered by my daughter as a good and loving mother. I want to be remembered by my friends as somebody who was loyal. No, more than being remembered, I hope that by younger women, I can help them aspire.
Andy Field, ABC News.
And a matter of hours after Walters passed away, the Vatican announced the death of Pope Emeritus Benedict. Thursday, he was laid to rest in a service led by the man who followed him, Pope Francis. ABC's Terry Moran at the Vatican.
Tens of thousands from all over the world gathered in St. Peter's Square, praying, remembering, here for the funeral of Pope Benedict XVI. The coffin brought into the great square, and Pope Francis presiding and delivering the homily. Speaking of the gratitude the church has for Benedict's life, it was the first time in centuries that a pope has laid his predecessor to rest. Before he died, Benedict made clear he wanted a simple ceremony, but simple in the Vatican does not mean small, especially for a former pope. Many cardinals and other religious leaders from around the world attending, and some political leaders, delegations from Italy and Germany, along with the leaders of Poland and Hungary, and royalty too. When Pope John Paul II died, there were more than 1 million people here in Rome, but Benedict had withdrawn from public view after he resigned. But for the faithful here and for so many more around the world, this is a profound moment of sadness and yet a fond farewell too. Cardinal Timothy Dolan, the Archbishop of New York, in attendance too, telling me about the man he knew so well.
His legacy as a pope, what would you say it is?
The intellectual, the reason
but yet a man of such durable faith. He brought them both together. I think that's going to be his legacy.
And the fact that he resigned the papacy.
There you go. A very brave act, which at the time, I have to admit, left me saddened and even a bit disappointed, because I thought, look, Holy Father, even if you are weakened and fragile, even if you can't do everything, we still need you. But the longer it went on, I admired that humility.
New York Cardinal Timothy Dolan speaking to ABC's Terry Moran at the Vatican, and in Santos, Brazil, just outside Sao Paulo. Thousands paid their respects after last week's death of soccer legend Pelé, filing past his coffin in the middle of his hometown soccer stadium before he was buried. Just days before President Biden pays a visit to Mexico, a major drug arrest, the Sun of El Chapo.
The Mexican city of Culiacan turning into a war zone after the capture of Ovidio Guzman, a leader of the Sinaloa cartel and son of infamous drug lord Joaquin El Chapo Guzman. Dozens of roadblocks were set up by armed men trying and failing to prevent Guzman from being taken out of the city. Attacks even launched at the airport. The attacks reminiscent of 2019, when Guzman was briefly captured in Culiacan by the Mexican military, but cartel gunmen besieged the city, and Mexico's president ordered Guzman released, a poignant reminder of the power wielded by criminal organizations in Mexico.
ABC's Matt Rivers says the U.S. wants Guzman extradited to face drug trafficking charges. New rules for people asking for asylum in the United States. President Biden this week saying,
my message is this. If you're trying to leave Cuba, Nicaragua, or Haiti, have agreed to begin a journey to America, do not just show up at the border. Stay where you are and apply legally from there. If you don't apply through the legal process, you will not be eligible for this new parole program.
That program will require applicants to be sponsored and go through a vetting process. The White House hoping it will cut the number of people at the southern border. More American military hardware on the way to Ukraine. The White House announcing Friday another $3 billion in aid. And for the first time, that will include Bradley fighting vehicles. This week, a missile strike by Ukraine killed dozens of Russian troops. ABC's Britt Clennett in Kyiv.
Russia raising the number of soldiers killed in a New Year's Day strike to 89, dozens higher than its initial death toll, but still far lower than the hundreds of deaths claimed by the Ukrainians. Russian officials said mass use of cell phones made it easier for the Ukrainian military to locate their barracks, saying troops disobeyed orders to turn their phones off.
A new variant of the coronavirus driving new infections. Here's ABC's Elwin Lopez.
That new subvariant already makes up about 40% of new cases across the country. The Northeast hit hard. That new subvariant XBB.1.5 makes up an estimated 75% of new cases there. And early research shows that it may be more contagious and immune evasive than other Omicron subvariants. But so far, there's no evidence that suggests it makes people sicker.
This week also saw the beginning of a new year. The ball dropping in Times Square, ushering in 2023. But just a few hours before, three New York City police officers were attacked by a man who officials think wanted to carry out a jihad after being radicalized. ABC's Aaron Katursky has the story.
Newly unsealed court records said Trevor Bickford wanted to kill an officer in uniform when he allegedly attacked three cops here in New York City with a knife on New Year's Eve. From here, prosecutors said Bickford intended to travel onward to continue his targeting of officers or government officials and had purchased a train ticket to Miami. The 19-year-old from Maine is charged with attempted murder, assault, and attempted assault. The judge considered him a significant flight risk and remanded him into custody following a virtual court appearance from the hospital where he's recovering from a gunshot to the shoulder. Aaron Katursky, ABC News, New York.
Jackson, Mississippi, again dealing with water problems. City schools coming back from the holiday break in virtual mode after dozens of schools reported low or no water pressure. Mayor Shokwe Antar-Lumumba.
It has been deteriorating for decades, and there isn't a valve to turn or a part to replace that can fix that overnight.
But he says some help is on the way, announcing this week $800 million in federal funds will be going into the water system. They were Romeo and Juliet in the 1968 movie based on the Shakespeare play. And now ABC's Jason Nathanson says the two actors are together again in a lawsuit.
Romeo and Juliet.
Director Franco Zeffirelli's Romeo and Juliet was seen as a classic, nominated for Best Picture at the Oscars and winner of two Academy Awards. It starred then-unknown actors Olivia Hussey and Leonard Whiting. She was 15, he was 16, and they're now suing Paramount Pictures, saying they were deceived into filming a nude scene, and that is child abuse. They said they were told images of their naked bodies wouldn't be used, but that wasn't the case, and they've experienced decades of distress since the movie debuted. They're reportedly seeking damages in excess of $500 million. No response so far from Paramount. Jason Nathanson, ABC News, Hollywood.
Coming up, what Prince Harry is saying about his brother in a new book and his mother to ABC News when World News This Week continues. Days before the official release of Prince Harry's memoir called Spare, it's already been on sale, and ABC's Michael Strahan has some of what's inside.
New details emerging from Prince Harry's memoir, Spare. After the book incorrectly went on sale in Spain ahead of its official release Tuesday, media outlets around the globe poring over every word. In an excerpt obtained by People magazine, Harry recalling a visit to Paris in 2007, where he says he retraced his mother Princess Diana's steps the night she died. Harry driving through the tunnel his mother was killed in, asking his driver to go the same speed she was traveling, 65 miles per hour. Harry reportedly writing, quote, "As the car entered the tunnel, I leaned forward, counted my heartbeats, and in a few seconds we emerged from the other side. I sat back. Quietly I said, 'Is that all of it?' 'It's nothing. Just a straight tunnel. No reason anyone should ever die inside it.'" The prince says he asked the driver to go through again, describing how a decade after her death, that drive unleashed a new wave of grief. Reportedly writing, quote, "It had been a very bad idea. I told myself that I wanted closure, but I didn't really. Deep down, I'd hoped to feel disbelief, doubt. Instead, that was the night all doubt fell away. 'She's dead,' I thought. 'My God, she's really gone for good.'" Other outlets reporting on the rift with his brother, Prince William. The Guardian detailing that alleged physical confrontation between the siblings in 2019. Harry reportedly writing William, quote, "grabbed me by the collar, ripping my neck loose, and knocked me to the floor." In a new interview airing on GMA Monday, I asked Prince Harry about their complicated relationship.
How would your mom feel about your relationship with your brother?
I think she'd be sad. I think she'd be looking at it long term, to know that there are certain things that we need to go through to be able to heal the relationship. I have felt the presence of my mum more so in the last 2 years than I have in the last 30.
Prince Harry speaking with ABC's Michael Strahan. And those are the people and events that made World News This Week. World News This Week was written and produced by Rob Hawley. I'm Chuck Sievertson, ABC News, New York.